It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And joining me in studio, because it's fun when it's a film talk show instead of a monologue show, which I've been doing the last few weeks, but sitting in, fellow IFJA member and future website guy, he's got a website coming up, Evan Dossie. How are you, sir?
Hey, Matt. Yeah, so IFJA, and I'm currently a writer for thefilmyapp.com, and just earlier this week, my wife and I and some fellow IFJA, former Film Yap writers, Nick Rogers and Sam Watermeyer, both guests on your show at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're launching the Midwest Film Journal. It's a locally based website for all your film needs.
Okay, so I'm going to ask the collaboration between your website and the IFJA and the Film Yap. Is this like the two different versions of the Temptations touring, or the two different versions of Yes touring?
Yeah, I mean we're doing our best to make sure that we're not just stepping on Film Yap's toes.
Anderson, well, you can't with Probst, but Anderson, Lloyd, Wakefield, and Howe, and all. Welcome to obscure band references there. So anyway, good to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I want to start with, and we're going to get to Mother. Just hold on, keep your knickers unwadded. But I want to start with, this was the film I got to see this week called Stronger. This is the one with Jake Gyllenhaal, and it's directed by David Gordon Green, who I think is back in order a little bit. This is the true story of the gentleman who whose legs were blown off at the Boston Marathon site. Gyllenhaal plays him. And not since, I think, Born on the 4th of July, but I think it does this in a little deeper of you can be a hero and be a flawed human being and at times not be a nice human being at the same time. And that's what Gyllenhaal's character goes through is he survives, he loses both his legs. I can't wait to see the special features on this because yes, they do the green screen just like they did with Gary Sinise over 20 years ago. But I think that obviously the technology is a little more advanced, and there's certain moments in particular with Gyllenhaal's character, and I don't know how much of it is CG trickery and as far as erasing and cut and paste, but there's a couple scenes with Gyllenhaal's character in a bathtub, and the stubs are right up against the basin. I mean, right up against the side of the tub, and I wonder how they do little moments like that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that. I didn't get a chance to check it out earlier this week, but Gyllenhaal has been on such a ridiculous role recently.
He's got a good streak going. Even if the film's not good, he's one of these kind of intense dive in. But I would hopefully like to think. Off screen, mentally healthy.
I've listened to some interviews with him where he seems like the most relaxed guy. It's like doing Prince of Persia got something out of his system.
A lot of money
or whatever. Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. And David Gordon Green, who got noticed early on for films like I'm scrolling because films like Undertow and God, I'm scrolling. Here we go. George Washington, All the Real Girls, Undertow, which was Snow Angels, which is kind of a stark, almost documentary feel. And then he got a hit sort of with Pineapple Express, and then I kind of think he fell off the rails with Your Highness and The Sitter, also Richard Probst's favorite film. And then, you know, there was like, oh, he's done films that I completely forgot, like Joe with Nicolas Cage, Manglehorn with Al Pacino. He did Our Brand is Crisis with Sandra Bullock. And I know he directed Eastbound and Down. So anyway, it seems like there's maybe a return to form as far as his early work, his almost docudrama look. And it's set in Boston. We've had a lot of films set in Boston. So and there's a certain somebody in my house who has a one in her age that apparently likes the accent. I adore Miranda Richardson, but she has been saddled with the overbearing, domineering Boston mom, like Melissa Leo from The Fighter and Laura Linney from Mystic River.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this one plays as a companion piece with last year's Patriots Day.
Yeah, Patriots Day had the problem of following up Blackwater Horizon, the other Peter Berg disaster film. I'm sorry, that's kind of what it was. You know, you put two docudramas with horrendous incidents happening in the same year with the same actor. One of them is not going to be seen, and sadly, it was Patriots Day. So that don't see those two films together as a double feature. don't do that to yourself. Watch one, but because one of those films would get canceled out because you decided to watch a Boston Marathon bombing double feature. Don't do that. Do you do that, Evan?
I would be tempted just to try it.
No,
but I might regret it.
You have a lovely lady at home, and you don't do that. Just two nights. Just don't do both of them. I bring this up because, okay, I'm going to rat her out. But Emma, the one who likes the accents, Emma wanted to do a double feature of Schindler's List and Sophie's Choice.
Oh, God.
That's, and if I said one, no. Two, horrendous. And then my wife chimed in and she goes, one of them's going to get cheated out. One's just going to get put by the wayside because you decided to watch two Holocaust films in
a row.
Where
did she get the idea to do that?
I look at her parents. So anyway, back to Stronger a little bit. Gyllenhaal is surrounded by a mixture of what looks like locals, but not. Like I said, mentioned Miranda Richardson, everyone's favorite Boston actress, is in this. Titania Maslany, who the other thing is she is they're broken up. And he decides to try to win her back by she's running the marathon. He's going to try to win her back by being at the finish line for her, which is how it happened. And I always say he doesn't get enough screen time. And it's always good to see the great that guy Clancy Brown playing Gyllenhaal's dad. And of course, anytime he gets to play a nice guy, period, that's always good for
really
Clancy Brown.
You can't go wrong with him anyway.
Right. So anyway, and then you have the brothers. And they do, yes, the Boston brothers, that's how they act. It's just out of Good Will Hunting, only older. And it does cover not just his rise, and I shouldn't say his rise, but I mean his he becomes a symbol of Boston Strong. And he is, and of course, this is, I think we get back a little bit to the title. Even not just physically coming back, but also mentally coming back, and he's kind of thrown into, you know, appearing at hockey games and baseball games and being a symbol of the city when it comes to courage. And he's just as scared and helpless and self-destructive. You know, he was that way before, and he still is. It just so happens that he has been labeled a hero, and they covered this gamut from people almost worshiping at his where his feet used to be, to, and there is a moment in a bar where somebody brings up that the whole thing was a setup. So
of course,
it does show the behind the scenes flawed aspect of the quote unquote hero, and that's also interesting. But I think most of all, you should see the film for Gyllenhaal's performance. I mean, it's very, very good.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with him.
Yes. So, okay. Besides the fact that I haven't had Evan on the show, he's also one of the few critics, because they did not, if I remember right, they did not screen Mother for us in advance.
No.
Okay. So I saw it, and you heard my wonderfully vague review on last week's film show. I saw it in the theater on a Friday morning at 11 a.m. with the old, the unemployed, and the weird. And there were five other people. The female in the audience was really upset because, well, We'll get to it in a second, but I'll say I think Paramount dropped the ball as far as advertising. They kind of pushed this as a horror film, and it is not. And I understand that the flip side is, well, if you make it a trailer for a Darren Aronofsky film, it'll look like something like the trailer for The Fountain, and nobody's going to go see it. So I think there's going to be a lot of people, and there still are, a lot of people going to see this thinking it's a Jennifer Lawrence film, and even though they're dating, apparently, it's a Darren Aronofsky film. That should never be forgotten.
Yeah, I went to a, I think it was last Friday, 7 p.m., Goodrich, Noblesville.
How many?
Five other people in the audience.
No!
Three were teenage girls. Had to have been under the age of 17.
Oh!
Started the movie with their feet up on the chair. Ended the movie, stunned silence.
Oh, they stayed?
Oh, yeah, they stayed. Woo. They made it the whole way through.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I rarely do this, but I'm going to leave a pause so we can talk about this. And if you want, I mean, if you want to, I'm sorry, I just have to do this. So if you don't want to hear about Mother, about what happens in Mother, I'm going to leave, which is hard to do for a podcast. I apologize. So anyway, hold on. Spoiler alert. Pause. Okay. If you're still listening to this, sorry, here we go. Evan, your thoughts on the film.
So I was laughing right before I got here. I saw you posted the poster, the Rosemary's Baby poster, and
is that a thing? Because I saw it. I don't think. I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure yet if it was created by Paramount or not. And of course, it's cute because that's Rosemary's Baby and Mother are the same studio.
Yeah, I think that was Aronofsky's idea because it's like, I laughed because someone asked you, is it like Rosemary's Baby? And all you said was, no.
No.
And it's like, it's not. But you can kind of see how Aronofsky thought it was. I mean, like, you could see the same logic that goes into the movie.
There's an attractive woman, and she's pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a house, and there's guests who won't leave.
Yeah.
That's about it. And, well, instead of the devil, it's God.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. That sort of speaks to the whole movie to me. It's like Aronofsky sitting there in his studio with the pen and paper, thinking, Mother, Jennifer Lawrence, this is the best thing I've ever done, and just like
with
going for it.
With an exclamation point.
Yes.
Okay, so I think for a lot of people, it's when Cain and Abel show up, when the sons of Michelle Pfeiffer and Ed Harris arrive. Because if you've seen the trailer, it kind of looks like a warped Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, or the couple that won't leave. And when the boy, and as it turns out, the Ed Harris character is dying. He wants to meet his favorite author. That would be Javier Bardem. God. And the two boys show up, the two siblings show up and argue over the family fortune. Get it? And as if Cain and Abel weren't enough, it just keeps going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they even, I have a confession. The Noah movie from 2014.
Go in peace, my son.
Oh, sorry, man. That was one of my favorite movies of 2014.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was, I liked Aronofsky's take on biblical mythology taken literally.
Until the rock monsters show up.
I thought that was hilarious. I mean, I just thought
but
it was
But I don't funny, think Darren but... thought it was hilarious.
No, that's true.
You know, you have butt-kicking Noah, and it kind of gets a little Michael Bay in the second half of that. But, the fact that, and I've talked with Richard Probst on this. If you're going to make a biblical film and make it challenging, and we'll get there's the Good Catholic, which we'll get to in a little bit, but he kind of Robert Muggy, the documentary filmmaker, I just had lunch with recently. He saw the film and he called it Buñuel on crack.
Yeah,
people who don't the mall crowd will not know Buñuel, but they will know crack and. more and more people show up. And there is, yes, if you've seen the trailers, there is a Kristen Wiig cameo, and it reminds me of George Harrison's cameo in Life of Brian. Aronofsky decides to go all the way as far as, and I honestly didn't get all the allegories, but I know Javier Bardem is God. She is pregnant. And guess who he is? Guess who the baby is? But there is a moment where all of the guests that will not leave, it is thinking about people who were that fanatical back then, only they're in modern dress now. And how far have we evolved from that type of fanaticism to where we are in the current state?
Oh, yeah. I thought that sequence, and there were actually, with my review of Mother, which is up at Midwest Film Journal.
Yes.
It's I don't pan it. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's a little one note, but there are definitely moments like that.
It's a big loud ass one note.
Oh yeah, it's a big one note. And like the earlier you start hearing it in the movie, I think the less you'll like the movie.
Right.
But I think the more you get into the atmosphere, and then that big third act just explosion.
And it's like, it becomes the kind of Lars von Trier. Oh my God! How far are you going to go with it? You're going to keep going. Okay, that's kind of.
Oh yeah. That is an. One review. I was speaking to another reviewer. He compared it to Antichrist, and not going quite as far as Antichrist, it's not a bad bad comp. You know.
Yeah, comparison. I saw Antichrist in the theater, and it was the last time I actually watched a movie with fingers over my eyes.
Have I ever told, or have you ever heard the story of how Joe, Sam, and I stumbled upon Antichrist one night?
Together?
We, Joe invited
Sam and
kidding?
I. Are you kidding?
Oh, me and Sam were young lads at that
this
point.
This isn't the FEF festival, is it?
Oh, no. We just went to Joe's for a night of pizza and a movie.
Wait, you guys had pizza and Antichrist?
What the hell is wrong with you?
This is me saying this.
We were going through Netflix, couldn't decide what to see. None of us had seen Antichrist. We deeply regretted it, but you
sat through the whole thing.
Oh yeah,
pizza and everything.
You don't quit.
Wow, you mean you guys didn't get back together and watch a Nymphomaniac?
I have to say, I think Antichrist is the kernel from where FYFF our festival came from.
Oh my God! I need to get you guys on as a group to discuss that. But
well, we're actually having FYFF 2.25. In a week, it's the horror film version.
I'm officiating a wedding, so I cannot be there. Maybe you need some spiritual guidance, son.
Well, I have to say, one of our picks is a North Korean propaganda kaiju film from 1983.
Well, of course it is.
So
okay, we'll get on that. All right, I want to do another pause, and I think we've discussed that ending. So I'm going to pause, and we'll get right back into a pause. Okay, I think so. If you fast forward, good luck on this podcast. But anyway, I liked the Mother. I didn't love it. I didn't get all of the references, and I'm sure. And I don't think Aronofsky is going to do a commentary track on this. And I'm sure people will be writing about this for a long, long time. But I give them points for ambition. People complain, and I was on social media with people like this, you know, that you know all the movies are remakes and sequels and da-da-da. And so here's a chance for something that's a little daring. Okay, a lot daring. And it's kind of like a couple, and hopefully you've never gone through this, sir, of, you know, what do you feel like eating? I don't know. Where do you want to go? I don't care. What about Italian? No, that's kind of this, okay? You know, I'm tired of the sequels, I'm tired of the remakes, I'm tired of this. Well, what about the Darren Aronofsky film? No, I don't want that either.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to have to keep Mother in mind when we're doing our year-end wrap-ups and stuff, because it really, I mean, there are only two or three movies this year that are as mind-blowingly, like, wow.
I think it's going to be in a run for Vision.
Oh yeah,
this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Now there was also a post in it was in the Observer, and I wrote about this on my Facebook page. And honestly, I did not see the author. I didn't read the author who wrote it until after I had posted it and then ranted. But the writer in the Observer said that Mother is not only the worst film of the year, it's the worst film of the century. And okay, I'm an old man. And I tell kids to get off my lawn all the time. But of course, I keep saying, well, I keep looking at my father's generation and older and think, well, I'm not them. I'm not ready to be them. However, people younger than me, and actually there are people my age that do this well, that drop the ever bomb. And this started with a lovely coworker I used to work with at Nouveau. I saw two films with this coworker, and they dubbed both films the worst film ever.
What were they?
I'm not telling you on the show because it's kind of a. I'll tell you
of
later.
Course.
But every other thing, and now this is where I sound like an old man. It feels like when you are younger, every other thing is the best thing or the worst thing ever, and I think you become the little child that cried ever.
I think getting over that is. I mean, especially for like Sam and I, film critics starting out, like. That is a habit to break.
Did you have okay? Well, yeah. So I'm thank you for verifying my old man stance. What I have said is you have to wait 5 years. This is if you're in the film criticism or film watching, this is a lifelong process. I would say wait 5 years, and then 5 years from now, if you still have the white hot intensity over that particular film or love of that film, then I will legitimately, me personally, Matthew Soucy, then I will I will acknowledge your dropping of the ever bomb. But and of course Chris Lloyd writes, I like you a lot. I'll see you in 5 years. But so anyway, so there is that. I'm tired of every other thing being the best or worst thing ever. And then a buddy of mine corrected. I think the Sentry is technically only 17 years old, but I think I finding out that the author was Rex Reed, A.K.A. the star of Myra Breckinridge. And if you haven't seen Myra Breckinridge, check it out. But the other part is. Yeah. Mother is not even close to being the worst film of the year.
It's not even the worst film I've watched
of the summer
week.
I know. I just watched The Mummy finally on video last week, so that's all right. But there are certain people when they drop a film title as the worst film of the year or ever, I tend to say quite often, you know what? You're just not applying yourself. There is plenty out there. I have inflicted them on friends, family. That's really not the worst film of the year
or
ever.
By far
you just have to keep digging. And I kind of do that with the people that say there's no good movies out there.
Oh, yeah. There's something good every week. You just have to go to the right theater.
Right. And if it's not at the multiplex, if it's not the multiplexes, it's at the art house. If it's not at the art house, it's probably on your your Amazon or Hulu or Netflix. Keep looking, or on your on your Redbox or wherever you go. You have more opportunities to see quality cinema now more than ever. You just have to apply yourself.
For sure. You just have to seek it out.
So yeah, I'm glad to know. Yeah, but that
it's funny you mentioned someone saying something's the worst thing ever, because my wife Allie and I over at our site, we've been doing something for a little while where we're trying to get into each other's like cinematic moods and watch movies we would have never like. You were talking about choosing dinner. If I were to say, hey, Allie, do you want to watch Armageddon tonight? She'd say, I never want to watch Armageddon, and I'm never talking about it again. So we're playing a game where we write down 15 movies.
Oh, my.
We draw them out of a hat, and we have to watch them. So,
how's that gone for you?
Terribly. She was not happy about Armageddon.
Okay, how long have you been married?
1 year.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, old man advice here. When Mrs. Soucy and I were recording, and that's that long ago, I dragged her to so much ridiculous stuff when we were dating. Seriously. In fact, there's a moment in the Big Sick, which is now out on video, which I recommend as well. But I laughed out loud. I did not LOL. But I laughed out loud because there is a scene in that film that is straight out of when Lynn and I were dating. I dragged her to blaxploitation movies. I dragged her to Enter the Dragon. I dragged her to Hammer horror films, stuff that she would never, ever watch normally on her own. And, now, fortunately, the costume dramas, the human dramas, I also enjoy. I tend to make the comparison. It's like a MasterCard logo. There's her world, there's my world, and there's enough of a center that we're really good.
Yeah.
But say right after we got married, we were at the house, and I think it was Foxy Brown was on, and I said, "Honey, Foxy Brown's on," and Lynn kind of popped her head and goes, "Do I really need to see this?" And I went, "Oh, I guess not." Yeah. She kind of went through that through the courting process. So
yeah.
Anyway, so what have you watched from picking titles out of a hat? So you watched Armageddon. That's a lot. That's a lot of Aerosmith ballads. No thanks,
man. Armageddon. We watched my picks. We watched Armageddon, The Road, Warcraft.
Oh my God, Warcraft! Not together, right?
Oh yeah,
that bored the daylights out of me.
Yeah, but on her side, she had me watch Moonstruck, which was great.
Oh, I love Moonstruck.
Captain Blood, which was great.
Huh. Okay.
Night of the Hunter, which was one of the best movies I've ever seen.
I love playing Night of the Hunter at Christmas, or not Christmas, at Halloween time when the children are at the door.
That is brilliant.
Having Robert, I wish I could have a doorbell that just says Robert Mitchum going, children!
Oh, man.
Also out on Criterion, go go check it out. So, all right. Let's shift gears a little bit. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org, hanging out with Evan Dossie of,
Midwest Film Journal.
And when does it launch?
October 1st, but it's already up. But
okay.
We're working on getting some content up there.
All right. So, yeah, Mother is out there, and I think that was the only thing, and Stronger. Go ahead.
Yeah, so...
Is there anything else new that opened this week?
Kingsman 2, Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
And I think Rebel in the Rye also opened?
Yes.
And Lega Ninjago?
Ninjago.
Sure.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
And Brad Status.
Yeah.
So that is out there. Okay. And I didn't see any of those. So we're going to move on.
Yeah. Well, Nick Rogers does that at our site have a Kingsman review up where he compares Matthew Vaughn's process of making a sequel to Raising a Puppy. So it's
interesting,
worth reading.
Okay, well, all right. Shifting to video, and I actually watched. So Evan, there are times where during the year, I've been doing the show long enough that there's certain weeks I'm like, you know what, I just don't want to review that, so I will review something else. However, when it comes out on video, I think I'm more inclined. Well, how bad can it be?
Oh, yeah.
So, and it's kind of, it's film critic self-abuse, I think. So, especially the second half of the year when we're kind of wrapping things up and we're trying to work on our best and worst of the year. And I might have missed it, or I just deliberately dodged a bullet from the multiplexes. So, I'll make up for it at video. So, yeah, I suffered through The Mummy last week. But there are three really good films out on video. Plenty to choose from. Of course, the big one is Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
My number two film of the summer, right behind Dunkirk.
Oh, yeah. Wonder Woman was an abnormally good movie.
Yeah. A lot of fun. In fact, I highly recommend if you ever look at Honest Trailers on YouTube, their treatment of Wonder Woman is kind. You know, it's saying a lot of things like, we've been saying all year, the bar was set pretty low.
Oh.
And they kind of really flew over it with flying colors.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's plenty of goodies on it. And I believe there's a couple scenes that were taken, deleted scenes that I can't remember if they're included in or not. But anyway, that's plenty out there. I've already been told by the family to go and get that. The Big Sick, which I mentioned earlier, this is a film that it's produced by Judd Apatow, not directed by Judd Apatow, thank God. And I was worried that it was going to have the Apatow rule. Comes close. You could probably maybe 10 minutes instead of 20. But this is a romantic comedy. We've seen these. On the template, we've seen these before. It's just, it's what you do with the template. In this case, it's he is Pakistani and she is not. And her parents are Ray Romano and Holly Hunter. And it's, my big Pakistani courtship. But no, but the chemistry between the two leads is fun. We've seen these elements. He's a stand-up comic. We've seen, anything from Funny People to... we've seen these templates where there is a meet cute and we get to see them develop and then there's some ups and downs in the relationship. And of course, the big one is she falls into a coma. And so he is trying to make up for lost time by being there and getting to know the parents and the parents get to know him. And then, not really a big spoiler, but when the plot point happens and she returns, I think that's where the Apatow thing starts to come in. I'm like, okay, so this is going to wrap up pretty quick, right? Well, not really, but everybody in it is good, and you don't mind the ride.
Yeah, it was one of the big surprises for me of the summer because I spent most of the month leading up to it coming out here. Like, Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon, his wife, they were on every podcast I listened to.
Yeah, they were, and full disclosure, they ran the NPR circuit big time.
Yeah, and I mean, they were fascinating, and it's based off of their story.
Right.
But man, the movie, it was up my top five this summer for sure. I'm actually surprised it's out on DVD so quickly.
Well, I think they want to cash in. Yeah, because I still think it's playing in a couple theaters here or there. So that's cool.
And they just announced Kumail is hosting SNL.
That's so cool. Yeah, I do like that. And Gal Gadot is doing it as well. Yeah. So that'll be cool. But this is from the director of Hello, My Name is Doris, which was 2 years ago, the Quirk Fest with Sally Field.
Yeah, that was pretty enjoyable,
so, we have a filmmaker that is stepping up, so I like that. The other one, and this is another one whose work I saw 2 years ago and went, I liked it, and he made another one. And this one is called The Hero. This is the one with Sam Elliott as an aging actor and voiceover artist who finds out he has terminal cancer, and he's trying to just make things right. This is from director Brett Haley, who 2 years ago gave us I'll See You in My Dreams, which was a big showcase for Blythe Danner. Sam Elliott was the man in that film, and I remember him being interviewed for NPR because he says, yes, the Westerns are fine, but it's nice to kiss a woman on occasion as well. But this is really a showcase for Elliott. He's surrounded by the likes of Nick Offerman, Kristen Ritter, Laura Prepon, his real-life wife, Catherine Ross, Max Gale, and it's him trying to wrap things up at least semi-decently before cancer really, really kicks in. He winds up getting an award for the Western Society. He's known for a short-lived TV Western series that he was on with Offerman, who he's his dope-smoking buddy. It's cancer. And he winds up getting a relationship with Laura Prepon, for you fans of Orange is the New Black and That 70s Show. But it's a low-key, easy picture to watch, dealing with a heavy subject and just watching Sam Elliott be very cool. So there are three films worth renting. There's plenty out there. So there's really no excuse that there's nothing new out, nothing good out there.
Oh, no.
All right. Shifting gears a little bit, over at the Tibbs Drive-In. Now, have you taken your lovely wife to the drive-in?
I've never been to a drive-in.
We need to fix that.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I need to fix that with my daughter. So here we go, at the Tibbs. Now, occasionally we also check and see the pairings and see if they fit or not. Oh, yeah, the other thing that opened this week, in case you didn't see Unfriended, you now have friend request, which, according to, if I remember The Onion, it's taking the concept of Unfriended and being bad. So you have friend request and It. Okay, R-rated scary stuff.
Yeah.
Screen 2, American Assassin, Hitman's Bodyguard. Dudes with guns, sure. Screen 3, Kingsman and Kidnap. Halle Berry double feature
that's
nobody would ever
punishment.
Think of. Yeah, that's a lot of, anyway. And then Screen 4, Lego Ninjago Movie and Leap.
Well, you know, you got the kids.
Yeah, that's good. All right. And then over at the Skyline in Shelbyville, you have the Lego Ninjago Movie and then Home Again, the Reese Witherspoon picture.
Wow.
So that's – and, boy, now, if you know the Skyline, normally they do at 1 a.m. they'll find some obscure grindhouse thing from the 60s or 70s that they got to print. Not this weekend. I guess if you're showing a Reese Witherspoon rom-com and Lego Movie – you're not going to have Hell Nurses on Wheels or something like that. So, all right, over at the Art Craft Theater, let's see. This is all depending on when you're listening to the show, of course. But Wednesday the 27th at 7:30 p.m., they're showing The Good Catholic. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
I'm sorry, a little IFJA discussion here at Film Sociology. We're not going to have trouble with a Hoosier Award this year. Between this and Columbus.
I mean, Columbus is so,
This is not as good as Columbus, but it's still pretty solid. This is, Probst and I talked, this is a faith film that actually, you know, quote unquote bad words are dropped, and we have a sort of an obscure ending, so I kind of like that.
How does it compare to Mother?
Don't see those together. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Or at the very least, see The Good Catholic first. September 29th and 30th at 2 and 7:30 p.m. at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, you have Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. October 6th and 7th, Arsenic and Old Lace, 2 and 7:30 p.m. And then October 13th and 14th, Halloween, 2 and 7:30 p.m. The original, not the Rob Zombie version. And then October 20th and 21st, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Excuse me. And then October 27th and 28th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Addams Family. And Friday, November 3rd, Sense and Sensibility, 7:30 p.m. That'll be fun. Anyway, hold on a second. Just a moment, please. The power of pause. All right. And then over at IU Cinema, once again, this depends on when you're listening to the show. You still have half an hour to run down to Bloomington and check out the original 1973 Westworld. Have you seen it, or did you watch the series?
I watched the series.
Okay.
I need to see the movie.
I guess. Okay. 7 p.m. on the 20, on, at 7 p.m. on Saturday the 23rd, you have Stalker from 1979. September 24th, that's Sunday at 3 p.m., this was the first, not only the first Betamax tape my father bought back in the 70s, it was also my introduction to dark comedy, 1971's Hal Ashby's Harold and Maude.
Wow.
Yeah. Explains a lot, really.
On Betamax.
We didn't know back then. Who knew? There were no video magazines telling us to buy one or the other. It was
a top loader,
and it held more time. Who knew? 6:30 p.m. on Sunday the 24th, Stalker. Monday the 25th at 7 p.m., the 2014 biopic Love and Mercy, Paul Dano at his best, I think. Thursday, September 28th, the 2017 drama Woodpeckers. Saturday, September 30th at 3 p.m., Shine On, the best animated films from Children's Film Festival Seattle 2017. And then at 7 o'clock, as part of the Staff Select series from 2008, Best Picture winner, Slumdog Millionaire. And then Sunday, October 1st, Longing and Belonging, the best live-action films from Children's Film Festival Seattle 2017. That's at 3 p.m. So there is plenty out there to check out. I want to get to Dead People We Like, because we never have time for Dead People We Don't Like. Just a little peeking behind the curtain. I recorded last week's show before I heard about Harry Dean Stanton passing. So don't think I was dismissing him and just doing all the Frank Vincent love. You know, Harry Dean Stanton, was that guy for decades, working in a slew of television and movies. And there's a group of guys that I watch movies with in Richmond. And actually, we watched probably his greatest performance because of the death of Sam Shepard, because Sam Shepard wrote Paris, Texas, and just a wonderful. Have you ever seen it?
It's been on my list since Sam Shepard died, actually.
Okay. Well, film critics have lists. We're going to get through them.
Oh, man.
We'll get through them. So, but going back to 1957, and Harry Dean Stanton was 91. I mean, he's got a film coming out later this year that he starred in. That's Lucky. So obviously there's going to be a lot of buzz about that, even Oscar buzz already. So we'll see.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've heard great things about Lucky from festivals.
Yeah.
And I know Richard Probst was really.
Mm-hmm. So we go back to 1957 with Tomahawk Trail, 1958 and The Proud Rebel. This is back when he was known as Dean Stanton, not making that up. We move on, again, a lot of TV. Ride in the Whirlwind from 1966, A Time for Killing, 1967. First thing I really noticed, the oldest thing I noticed him in, was he was one of the prisoners. He played Tramp in Cool Hand Luke back in 1967. Also appeared as Spook in The Miniskirt Mob. I didn't write it. The Rebel Rousers, was one of Kelly's heroes. And throughout the 70s was kind of earned the that guy status. You know, he could have had lunch with Strother Martin and LQ Jones and those guys. But like Tulane Blacktop, Cisco Pike, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, Dillinger, Zandy's Bride, Cockfighter, was one of the FBI agents in The Godfather 2, Rancho Deluxe, Farewell My Lovely, The Missouri Breaks, 92 in the Shade, Straight Time, underrated film with Dustin Hoffman, appeared in Wise Blood, of course, appeared in Alien, which kind of elevated his status a little bit, The Rose, The Black Marble, was the sergeant in Private Benjamin, was Brian and Brain, I should say, in Escape from New York, appeared in Coppola's One from the Heart, Repo Man, he had 1-2 punch of Repo Man and Paris, Texas, as well as Christine, John Carpenter's Christine. Yes, he was in the original Red Dawn. And then a certain high school clique got to know him as Molly Ringwald's dad in Pretty in Pink. See, he just covers all
everywhere.
The territory. Right. Slam Dance, Mr. North. He played Saul in The Last Temptation of Christ. Wild at Heart, Man Trouble, Twin Peaks. Never Talk to Strangers. And I have to get to Never Talk to Strangers in a little bit. As he says, typing during the show. Kobe used to make fun of me for this. I'll get to that. There's a link with that, and I have a story behind that in a little bit. The Big Bounce, The Pledge. He was Toot Toot in The Green Mile. Was Richard Farnsworth's brother in The Straight Story. Was the judge in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Inland Empire. Was the security guard in The Avengers. And of course, Lucky. And that was 5 years ago. So he was 86. Still, but yeah, 91. And there's certain actors after a while you've never heard of the films, but he's constantly working.
Oh yeah, and he's just he never stopped being in big stuff.
I mean,
and he was in the most recent the 18-hour movie Twin Peaks: The Return that they had coming out. He was like the heart and soul of that show.
Exactly.
It was impressive work.
Okay, so there's a little thing I forgot to mention this obit as well, but the film Never Talk to Strangers is directed by English director Peter Hall. Peter Hall is best known. He was the artistic director for the Royal Shakespeare Company from 1960 to 1968. He took over the direction of the National Theater. So if you look at his timeline, he directed, obviously, mostly known for plays and films, but he did do a 1968 film version of A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is amusing to watch because of its, not only because of its very young cast of now heavy hitters, but it was one of these kind of BBC looking productions. It looked like it was made for £20. It was, you know, like somebody had a castle that they could, you know, it was like Hammer. Somebody had a castle that they could shoot at on the weekends when nobody was there. This is 1968. David Warner is Lysander. Diana Rigg is Helena. Helen Mirren is Hermia. A very young Judy Dench is Titania. Ian Holm is Puck. Ian Richardson's in it as Oberon. I mean, and it's fascinating. It's not the greatest Midsummer Night's Dream, you would think, with all those young folks, but it's amusing to watch.
Oh, yeah, adding that to my list.
Yeah, it really is. And then, so anyway, but he did films like The Homecoming and Perfect Friday. And then for some reason in 1995, there is a really bad Canadian thriller called Never Talk to Strangers. It's Rebecca De Mornay and Antonio Banderas. Now, there's a history of this film and I. My dear friend Laura Jansen, at this time, we were living in the Chicago area. She was in the city. I was in the burbs. And it was quite often back then we would drink a lot and watch bad cinema. And it all started because of Rebecca De Mornay's performance in The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. So she kind of started this trend of a certain circle of friends, her and I and a couple others. But we saw this film in the theater and it was bad. It's just not good. And then looking back, I cannot believe the gentleman that helped launch the National Theater had anything to do with this picture. Now, the other story, name dropping, was my first job when I lived in Chicago. I was a driver for the Chicago Film Festival. This is 1995. I got to meet Siskel and Ebert.
Wow.
Separately. And I got to tell them I was from Flint. So, of course, they asked how things were because of Roger and me. But I actually got to correct Roger Ebert on one of his rules. And I was 25 and, you know, thought I had onions of steel. And because he had a rule. And if you look at the Roger Ebert movie glossary, there's thousands of terms out there. I highly recommend those. But there was one. It was the Harry Dean Stanton M. Emmett Walsh rule. And it was a film that features either one of these guys can't be all bad. And I mentioned Never Talk to Strangers. And Roger said, yeah, I guess. But then again, he said, then he told me, well, there's another rule I had to get rid of as well. And I said, which one is that? And he said it was the no good film has a hot air balloon scene.
What was his exception?
The Wizard of Oz.
How did he ever make that rule in the
right?
first place?
Right, exactly. But well, I don't think it was the Wizard of Oz fault. I think it's like bad romantic comedies of the 60s, 70s, and beyond that had those sequences. So anyway, yeah. So it all ties back to me dropping names. but no, Harry Dean Stanton, thank you, sir. I want to get also that, and I said it was a bad week for Scorsese because one of the inspirations for his masterpieces passed away, as well as an actor he worked with in Boxcar Bertha. Jake LaMotta, the famed heavyweight fighter, a heavyweight fighter who lived until he was in his 90s, is pretty impressive.
I was pretty surprised when I saw that obituary.
That's... You thought he was dead, didn't you?
Right.
No. But yeah, so now you have a great reason to watch Martin Scorsese's 1980 masterpiece, Raging Bull.
As if you needed any other reason to watch Raging Bull.
Like you've never seen it. So I got to see it in the theater with my dad. I was 10. I'm fine. But
pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's good parenting. But it's also a masterpiece, not just the greatest boxing film. And there have been good boxing films. And boxing films owe a huge debt to Raging Bull when it comes to how to shoot fights. But also the story of immortality. You know, this was a guy, you know, he was called the Raging Bull or the Bronx Bull. He was just as aggressive outside the ring as he was in. And it's a reminder that sometimes we take our work home with us, and sometimes our work is our life. And this was a huge cautionary tale as far as immortality and jealousy with this film. Terrific, terrific film. Okay. Bernie Casey. Now, Bernie Casey, it turns out to be a much bigger Renaissance man than I think a lot of people expected. Yes, he is a former football player turned actor, yes, but he was also a writer and a poet and just a man, a painter, I believe, a man of all trades. And got, like Fred Williamson, like Jim Brown, made the transition from the gridiron to the silver screen. His first film was Guns of the Magnificent Seven. Yes, one of those sequels in 1969. Appeared in Tick, 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 the Jim Brown is a Sheriff movie in the South. He had a cameo in Brian's Song. Appeared in Martin Scorsese's Boxcar Bertha with Barbara Hershey and David Carradine. Yeah, Mystery Science Theater fans and fans of sci-fi horror, he was the gargoyle in the TV movie of Gargoyles. And then appeared in films like Hitman, Black Gun, Cleopatra Jones, Maury, which I believe was trying to be a basketball version of Brian's Song. Really good in Hitman. Hitman is basically a ghetto version of Get Carter. It's the same. It's based off the same novel from Get Carter. Also appeared in Cornbread, Earl and Me. Yes, he was Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde. Yes, I own it. Shut up. Also appeared in, and then when the exploitation era died down, he still kept working. Appeared in The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie. The prison drama Brothers was Arch and Sharky's Machine, the Burt Reynolds cop film that I absolutely enjoy. Was Felix Leiter to Sean Connery in Never Say Never Again. We'll get to Bond in a little bit. Yes, was UN Jefferson in Revenge of the Nerds. I still, even as a 14-year-old, seeing Revenge of the Nerds and that scene where the black fraternity sticks up for the nerds, are we really comparing the plight of nerds to the plight of black people? Are we really? I don't know about that. So, but I know people love that. And there's other things that the Revenge of the Nerds we can't really talk about that's got issues. Was the Colonel in Spies Like Us. Was in, of course, played John Slade in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka. So he's able to make fun of his old days. Williamson didn't do that film. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, of course. Another 48 Hours. Cemetery Club. In the Mouth of Madness. Tomcats, On the Edge. I mean, just very cool guy and a true Renaissance man.
In the Mouth of Madness is one of my favorite movies.
Is it really?
Yeah, saw it for the first time last year, actually. I'd put it off forever and blew me away.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's that weird kind of John Carpenter in the 90s. And
so unsettling.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so first off, you're back on the mend.
Yes.
Good to have you, healing process. But is this something you were going to be writing about, or you just did this because you were ill?
I just did this because I was ill. May write about it, but in addition to 10 days of antibiotics, I took I was pretty sick, down with an ear infection, and watched all 24 James Bond movies in like 4-5 days.
5 days?
Yeah, I just kept watching them. It just, you know. Yeah,
occasionally you would type stuff on the internet, and I was like, you know, just like a one-sentence riff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, we know which one he's watching.
Oh, yeah. You can't do it alone. But
did she watch them with you?
Oh, no. Allie, no. She would not watch. She'll watch the Daniel Craig ones. I actually think I have one more tonight. But
okay.
She won't watch the old ones.
Really? Why?
She just has no interest.
They look old.
But you know,
I'm sorry, I'm putting words in your wife's mouth.
I came to realize that there's that one James Bond when you're 10 years old that just is the best James Bond will ever be for you.
It was Roger Moore, and yeah. No, that's not true.
Really?
No, it's Connery. Always been, always will.
Fair enough.
Craig yeah. also saw. Look, the character has to evolve, and you know, I think some evolutions are better than others.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But no, I am an exception to that rule, sir.
Well, hey, I fully recognize From Russia with Love is the best of them, but man, you can't go wrong with some of those Pierce Brosnan movies that are just like
the early GoldenEye. I think GoldenEye and World Is Not Enough. Only because it helps that Michelle Yeoh's in it. She's a Bond woman that can kick butt.
Well, that's Tomorrow Never Dies.
Or Tomorrow Never Dies. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. World's Not Enough is Dr. Jones. the other Dr. Jones.
Oh,
who,
man.
Okay, so what I was writing on your thing, yeah. so you wrote, I think you wrote Dr. Christmas Jones is the worst.
I did write that.
Of course, I snarkily wrote, but she's pretty and she wears half clothes and she's a scientist. And I got to interview Denise Richards. She is originally from Downers Grove, Illinois. And we got a deal. We had gotten a deal to interview her for the Downers Grove paper. So I got like 15 minutes with her. And she had just signed on to do the project, but she couldn't talk about it.
Oh.
You know, she couldn't really. You know, it was only reported. You know, she would acknowledge, yes, I'm in the next James Bond film. No, I can't tell you anything about it. And I tried to do the old Dustin Hoffman, Carl Bernstein move, like, okay, I'm going to tell you a plot point, and then I'm going to count to 10, and if you don't say anything by the time you, and she's like, I really can't answer that. So anyway, we talked about, but we wound up talking about, you know, her growing up in Downers Grove and what she remembered. And we talked about some of her films and take heed, young journalists. I waited until the end of the interview to actually bring up Wild Things. And then
around that time, that's.
Yeah. Cause that had already come out and. You know, I believe she said that there were websites devoted to Wild Things and you should not look those up at work. And and they're 90s websites, so they're really slow and archaic now. So but anyway.
I can't hold Christmas Jones against her. That's
look, I think there was Agent Goodhead and
Holly Goodhead.
Yeah, and then the science, you know,
Sylvia Trench.
Moonraker's kinda
that movie is special. That's an experience.
Yes, but it is.
I got to the point where I was so feverish and I'd watched so many James Bond
movies. You were hallucinating?
Hey, I loved pretty much all of them except for the Timothy Dalton ones. Those were a little bit rough.
So I have a Blu-ray box set of Bond. It is all of the MGMs, but not up until Skyfall. I had to buy it. So thank you, Half Price Books. But I was revisiting. I'm at the Daltons. I've not watched the Daltons in a long time, and I've never heard the commentaries on those. I've heard the commentary tracks on Connery to Moore. But just have not gotten to this one yet, so I just need a spare Sunday to do it. But it's also football season, so I'm stuck.
Oh man, yeah, I would love to hear the commentaries on those. You know, the one that surprised me the most of all the James Bond movies we watched.
Uh huh.
Finished watching Octopussy.
Yeah.
Suddenly felt like the best movie of all time. Never felt that way before.
Really?
And went to the doctor the next day, but it was pretty great. And you know, it does have a balloon in it, so.
Yeah, and he also tells a tiger to sit. And,
he does.
You know, more Maude Adams is always pretty good.
Oh yeah.
So what did you gain anything from this besides the fact that it you hallucinated apparently?
Well, I grew to really appreciate that series over time.
How were you before you got this collection?
I did a tally, and most of them I hadn't seen since I was 10 years old. So I decided that I probably needed to revisit them, and most of them aged much better than I expected.
That's cool.
Yeah. So,
have you seen the documentary Becoming Bond?
Yes,
the one man show on George Lazenby.
Man, okay, that is the one thing I gained from rewatching them. I loved his performance as Bond.
And you could have cast anybody in that role. That person would not have stood a chance because he wasn't Sean Connery.
But he's so different than Sean Connery.
He's so different. And this is the other thing. This is what film critics do. We're going to correct you. He had a 6-picture deal, and he turned it down, and basically kind of whipped his middle finger out at it, because he didn't want to be stereotyped. And I think he did get blackballed.
Oh, totally.
So, but it's a fast. Anyway, I think it's on which one? It's on one of the Hulu, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, once you get past his childhood, because I understand the filmmakers, I think, had one shot with this guy. Sitting down in front of a camera, and he was going to tell his entire life story. There's a lot of live action reenactments of his younger days that tends to get a little tiresome. And look, there's Jane Seymour. But once you get past because I think everybody who's watching is going, all right, let's get to the Bond stuff. And I would like to have seen what he did on Kentucky Fried Movie and working with Jim Kelly. But I digress.
Oh yeah, fair enough. Yeah, he's the only Bond to quit being Bond because James Bond was too square. If that's not the most, 69 thing you ever heard.
That, and I know they wanted him to do the press junket dressed as Bond, so, grew his hair out, grew his beard out, and just kind of said, nah, I'm not doing that.
No.
So, it's also one of the great what could have beens, I think, in that case.
Especially since Connery's return was pudgy and...
I know. Yeah. That's a shame. But then it made... Live and Let Die, even when you have Yaphet Kotto ballooning, becoming a human balloon.
Kaminga balloon.
That's just, ooh. Live and Let Die has my favorite stunt. The boat jump is my favorite stunt movie
that is
in a
impressive.
Bond film.
Allie was with me when I was finishing Live and Let Die, and as the Kaminga balloon was about to happen, I was like, Allie, stop reading.
Look at this.
Look at this. The look on her face.
You turned into a child.
The look on her face was...
Look at this.
Not showing her any more Bond movies.
Really? No?
Well, she was not impressed.
We just got a couple minutes left, but you're talking about showing your wife.
Yeah.
But in The Big Sick, he tries to show her a scene, tries to show her the Vincent Price film, The Abominable Dr. Fibes, and that's exactly what my wife and I watching TCM, and I think it was Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, one of the late 60s Christopher Lee vampire movies. And my wife has an MFA, and she's an equity actress. She's like, she can't act, and he's terrible, and Christopher Lee's not saying anything. It was exactly like that.
Oh yeah. Now my wife is the one who's usually showing me those movies. Like, she is filling in all of my
classic, Hammer stuff.
Oh yeah, all of my classic horror gaps, all of my classic gaps. But I mean, if I show her, Warcraft, like we said earlier, yeah, that's just it. That's just, she's a bad actress. This movie doesn't make any sense. Why do you love this movie?
Ben Foster, shut up.
Oh,
stop,
man.
Droning on. We have Jared Leto for that. Stop it.
Oh, God.
Sorry, that's just, anyway, that's
hey,
me.
That's okay.
All right, so once again, the website is launched October 1st.
Yes. It is Midwest Film Journal. We're going to have a lot of reviews, DVD reviews, but we're also going with a lot of really cool themed commentaries. We're launching with No Sleep October, my watching horror movies and being scared thing. And in December, I'm launching a Godzilla rewatch called Are You There, Godzilla? It's Me, Evan. So,
oh, God.
Tune in for that.
Oh, Judy Blume is so proud. And not Chelsea Handler. Judy Blume came up with it first.
Judy Blume would be deeply proud of the cover art that we are designing for it. So...
Problem is, they're going to stick Raymond Burr in the background for the American audiences.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Experience over
youth.
Looking
forward to that one.
I know. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Evan, thanks for hanging out. Glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me today, Matt.
All right. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. No excuses. Give Mother a shot, if you dare. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!